This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So this experience of one body, our merging together, that pleasure, the simple pleasure, is of course not just in singing. It's in this body also in zazen, in the sitting practice. There's this doorway to conjunction. There's this sense of sitting in this upright posture, in our breath, in the stillness of whatever space we're in concentration. And this awareness somehow goes from this voice to all voices, to this body to all bodies, to all existence. Not because we're directing anything that way, it just arrives, so that there's this kind of awesome, like a little kid, wow, awesome connection to this and this and this and the mountains and the trees and the scrub jays and the creeks and the mosquitoes and everything, everywhere, all the time, as they say in the movie. So, zazen is one of these refuges that you can sit down and intentionally take a position and see what happens. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens at Trader Joe's. Sometimes it happens on the freeway. Sometimes it happens when you meet the eyes of Oliver. So the question is, where does this body begin and end? This body. Where does it begin and end? This body. And I know you've all had the experience of seeing somebody that you love and falling into their embrace, and that sense of, we usually think it's our skin, right? Our skin is the edge of our bodies, but you fall into the arms of someone you love, and where's that edge? It's gone. You have merged into this thing that you're together being. Or smitten by a baby. You could be smitten by a baby's little smile, this little tiny hint of a smile that, yeah, life's good. And there's no me and Oliver, there's us. And that's us, all of us. The edges soften and we feel this kind of expansive connection without a lot of barriers, without a lot of boundaries. And for this millisecond, there's no I that's separate from anything else. This I, the sense of I, this kind of heavy sense of I that I carry around, when I feel separated from one body, can drop away. And it feels like freedom. It feels pretty good. This rises up, or we, or us, or everything, rises up and kind of greets you, like, hi. Everything you notice is noticing you. I'm not saying in some magical way, maybe mysterious, but nothing magical. It's just there all the time, and sometimes you notice that you're all doing this together. This sense of togetherness is at the heart of Sangha. And Sangha is one of the three treasures. Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. By the way, this is Sangha right now. We are Sangha right now. Traditionally, Sangha referred to the collection, really, of nuns and monks and lay practitioners and priests who studied with the Buddha. They left the worldly life and followed the Buddha around as his disciples so that they could study with the Buddha. And when he died, they continued to collect, and they were completely supported by the community around them, the greater Sangha, who provided them with food and everything else they needed, because they had given up everything to study with the Buddha. But of course, Sangha is not this, only this. It's everywhere you go. I shop at Trader Joe's. It's at Trader Joe's. There's Sangha there. You know it. You make eye contact with somebody and you're like, hi. You don't have to speak. You don't have to know their names. You never have to see them again. But you feel this very basic, open-hearted connection. And it's on the freeway too, although I think some of you might doubt that. It is. It's on the freeway. Those people going down the road are you, and you are them. They're your Sangha. And of course, it's in your family, wherever you find your family, whatever you call your family. And of course, it's at your workplace, wherever that is. It could be at a Zen temple. If we're paying attention, we can't help but notice that every Sangha, everywhere, is a mirror. Everywhere you go, everybody you encounter, everything you observe is a mirror. In that mirror, you can experience merging, one voice, one body. In that mirror, you can experience resistance. I don't like that guy's face. Or why is that car following me so closely? It's a mirror everywhere you look. So this morning, our song together, which you did so well, I'm so impressed, wasn't just for goofing around play. It was practice. I mean, it was also for goofing around play, because I don't want you to have the impression that this practice is a serious business. It's both and. It's playful, and also everything else. But I wanted you to have the experience of losing your sense of yourself for a minute in this kind of play, childlike play, of just singing a song and listening to how we all just merged, and then we were back. Were you eager to sing, or did you feel some resistance, like, I can't sing? Well, I don't want anyone to hear my voice, and I've been told I can't carry a tune, whatever it might be. Were you eager, or did you feel resistance? And if you felt resistance, did you see that as a teacher for you? That's the mirror, right then. In Sangha, wherever you find yourself, we don't push that reflection away. We don't say, I'm not looking in the mirror. We receive what's in the mirror. We're in the mirror. Everything else is in the mirror. You could say that nothing's in the mirror because everything's moving. But there it is in any given moment. When you notice your resistance, it's a great opportunity. It's your teacher. So this morning we sat together, we bowed together, we chanted that poem together. And in all that process, you were inviting harmony or resistance or anything in between. You were doing that. If you felt uncomfortable or self-conscious about bowing, you could look at that resistance, that self-consciousness. What did it show you? Remember, everything's in the mirror. Nothing's hidden. So some years ago, here at Sesshin, Sesshin is a week-long meditation period. After the very last sit of every day, we're in the evening now, we sing the Three Refuges. It's a beautiful thing that we sing together because we've been in silence for all day, days. It's a week-long retreat. Everything's silent. The meals are silent. The work is silent. And so the last thing we do before we go to bed is we collect ourselves and we sing the Three Refuges in Pali. And it's one of my favorite things. And I remember this particular night because it was February at our Nehane Sesshin. And outside, it was a full moon. We reset the Sesshins around full moon. And it was a foggy night. And it was very, very kind of mystically beautiful outside. The trees were glowing in this moonlight, and yet there was fog in between and amongst them. And I remember what a special thing it was. The moonlight was coming in here as well, and we all just gathered together to sing these refuges, almost like the fog and moonlight were us, and we were there. There was kind of no difference between both inside and outside. And I remember that because one of our practitioners, who is here today, has this beautiful voice, and I lean on her voice. I love it. I like ride it. And she has this way of getting to the harmony on the first note. You know, I need to hear a couple notes, I find the major third, and then I can sing. She can do it. She just, everything. She just starts in harmony. And I love that. It's one body there, too, one body practice. We're all singing together and riding on each other's voices. So we go to start singing, and her voice wasn't there. And then I start, where is she? She's not here. I'm looking around. I find myself kind of singing, but not really one body anymore. I've taken myself out of the actual experience, looking for the voice in my own ears. Because her voice is very grounded and very expansive, and everybody kind of rides. She's not leading. She's just kind of making her voice heard, and all of us can make our voices heard together in this kind of one body singing. Well, I kept waiting for the tone to come in, and it didn't, because she'd gone to the restroom, which she's allowed to do. But I noticed that when this harmonizing voice didn't come in, I found this experience, I started to tighten. You know, I started to feel like, I had left the sense of merging in one body. In that moment, I wasn't just missing her voice. Of course, I was missing her voice. But it wasn't just her voice. I was missing our voice. That thing that happened this morning when we sang. Our voice. I had subtly shifted my own experience of reality, existence, from us merging, singing, one body, to I, separate, looking for the singer. Where was she? So I had left the one body. The person in the bathroom hadn't left the one body. I had left the one body. And so this teaching has stayed with me over the years. Our voice changed, not because it was hers alone that was missing, but because it revealed how interwoven we are. And I stepped out, even for a little bit. Her voice had held our voices together in a way, but our voices hold together no matter what. So that evening taught me that this one body awareness is not about perfection. It's not about having the song sound a certain way, or even us sound a certain way individually or collectively. It's actually about harmony. I'm not talking about major thirds, I'm talking about merging, harmony, or the way I actually experience it in my life here at Jokoji is attunement. Attunement. Because we're not all singing like the dwarves all the time as we whistle as we work, although there's some of that going on. Attunement. Attunement to what's happening and everyone around you, what's happening. And we're getting good at this at Jokoji. The residents who live here, this community, we're tuned outside of just this eye awareness into this awareness pretty reliably. Whether you're cleaning or sweeping or teaching or cooking or sitting together, there is a real sense of we're doing this together and we couldn't be doing it alone. It's impossible to be doing it alone. So the question is, in your own lives and our lives, right now and out in the big world, are we in harmony? Are we tuning in? Are we recognizing right up front in all of our ordinary interactions, our connections, our endless connections? Are we resistant to what we're experiencing? Or are we in harmony? Are we seeking harmony? In all of the communities in which we travel, all these little kind of Venn diagrams, you know, there's this place, and there's this place, and there's this place, and there's this place. Living in any community, we actually make agreements, whether they're stated or not. They're not imposed from outside. They're our own agreements that we make. And any resistance to agreements are your opportunity to show up for yourself and to show up for the whole world. And that's what I mean when I say that Sangha is a mirror. Here we have these agreements to pay attention at Jikoji. We have these agreements to pay attention all the time. That's the agreement. Pay attention. That means I don't go off and do whatever I want whenever I want. I pay attention. How does this affect my friends here? How do we move like we're singing together on any given day? Most of us walk around most of the time feeling separate. And part of this is a pleasurable thing. We like our autonomy. I can do what I want and no one can tell me what to do. Thank you very much. But when we're really paying attention, that's a farce, folks. We don't exist but for each other. There's nothing but interconnection. When we experience interconnection, which we did playfully this morning singing, the edges that make us feel separate and alone, they soften, and sometimes they're just gone. And you can enjoy that. The Buddha said, when this is, that is. From the arising of this comes the arising of that. He wasn't just being poetic. This is structure. It's actually Dharma, the law. It's all connected. You know that the breath you're breathing comes from a tree that you may never see. The anger you feel might be an echo from another life. I'm not talking literally your prior life, but your ancestors. You may have inherited some awareness that arises like anger, and you may not understand it. The big smile of joy you might offer at Trader Joe's at the checkout, you have no idea how far that could ripple in that person's day, and then in everyone's day, till it comes back around. It goes on like this forever. Nothing, nothing, nothing but connection. We're all caught up in this web. In the Buddhist terminology, it's called dependent arising. Nothing arrives separately. There is no song without the voices. So there's a koan that I think plays with this a little bit. A koan is an old story from the Chinese tradition. I'm very fond of them. And this is a really short one, so it's good. This is a monk asking Joshu, his teacher, this question. The monk asks, all things return to one. What does the one return to? And Joshu says, I'll tell you, when you finish drinking all the water in the West River. Drink all the water in the West River. So the monk is actually having an insight that there's this oneness, there's this interconnected endlessness of interconnection. And his teacher kind of cuts through his abstraction, making it into something separate. The one is something separate, and tells him to go drink the whole river. In other words, go be the river. And when you're done being the river, letting the river enter you so completely, you'll know there's no river and no you separate from the river. Go drink the whole river. So this poem that we read this morning, that chant is called Sandokai. The harmony, we were doing that, the harmony of difference and equality. This is what we've been talking about. And it speaks to the same thing. We said together, leaves spread from roots, trunk and branches share essence. Just like trunks and branches and leaves come from the same roots, we have these distinct voices, these distinct causes and conditions, these distinct expressions of our own life force. But we are also one body with many voices, with this great opportunity to merge those voices and enjoy it, this life. So in Sangha, wherever you find Sangha, you can tune yourself. Just tune your awareness to the whole thing. Tune your awareness to each other and what's happening right here, the flow of what's happening right here, like you did singing the song. You listened to everybody else to know where you were. That's actually how life is, not you separate. This body, our own experience, is not a solo performance. It's a chorus. So this one body awareness isn't only about harmony. It's about interconnection, this truth that we are endlessly interconnected. One of our ancestors from the 13th century, his name was Dogen. You've probably heard of him. Many of you have. Dogen. Ahay Dogen. He's named after Ahay Ji, his temple. Anyway, that's Dogen. He's the 13th century ancestor in our lineage. And he said this: the entire world in 10 directions is the true human body. This is not a metaphor. It's a direct statement. We are that body. Not this body, the one that we identify with all the time and are worried about and want to make it, you know, polish it. Not that body. We are the body. Like the body including the stars and the fog and the trees and the wind and the mountains and fire and water and grief and loss. And joy. It's endlessly connected. You're an expression of it. You have a part to sing. So wherever you find yourself, on the freeway, at a Zen temple, at Trader Joe's, in your family, at a workplace, you are here to express your own vital offering. The thing that no one else can do but you. And no one can do it for you. And they can't tell you how to do it either. Nobody can tell you how to do you. You have to find the harmony in yourself and let it rip. And Zazen, this practice of sitting, invites you to do this. To find your own seat in this great, vast interconnection. To sit, to breathe, to listen, not just to your own thoughts, body experiences, but to the whole big, beautiful mess. As living expressions of one body. Ahay Dogen said, the body and mind of the Buddha way is grass and trees and wall rubble, stuff that's fallen out of the walls. It is wind and rain and water and fire. That's one body. Dogen is not saying that you are one body, that you are the rain, that you are the water or the fire. He's suggesting it is you. Under your nose, in your lungs, this air, between our hands, between our voices. It's interpenetrating everything. It's what we exist with in its beingness. So whenever we gather as a couple, you and your partner, as a sangha, as a workforce, as a Trader Joe's shopper, in a Zen center, as humanity, members of humanity, as members of the entire kingdom of things that are sentient, we're not seeking conformity. We're not seeking everybody to be the same. Harmony is actually not to be the same, but to tune ourselves to the rhythm of the whole thing as life, as it emerges now and now and now and now. If we're not tuning ourselves to context, where am I? What's happening? We're actually resisting. And that's why we feel so alone so much. Singing, which is sometimes sitting, teaches us to listen really deeply for how to be in tune, to offer ourselves completely to this and this and this as it emerges, and to trust, to really deeply trust that even when we feel out of tune for a minute or two, there's no way. There's possible to be outside of the song, because we are the song. So this expression is a shared existence. So now I want to try and repeat the song. We're going to do it again. It's an encore. Imagine the audience is all applauding. Come back, do more. This time I want you to think of it as an expression of one body. So really tune yourselves, okay? And make this like a singing bow to our interconnection. Ready?
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 gently down the stream. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
May you row, row, row your boats gently down the stream, merrily, merrily, merrily. You know, I fail to introduce myself in beginning meditation and even here. I'm sorry. Hi. My name is Nenzen. I'm the abiding teacher here, and I'm really happy to have you here. So if there's anything that you'd like to ask or comment about, this is your turn. Shoho-san.
The song says, life is but a dream.
Yeah.
Is life a dream?
What part? This right now? You tell me.
Is my question a dream?
You know, that it's true. Do we know? I don't know. We could be someone else's dream, all of us, this moment. But I actually think it's a really practical question, not just this funny question. Because if you've ever had the experience of having a very strong reaction to something, like, let's say it's kind of a not settling reaction, you're having this very strong reaction. It could be food if you want to make it really easy, but it could be someone else's conduct or your own experience, which is what that is. And then you spend some time just being aware of this, and sometime later you realize, oh, I don't really believe any of the things I thought that was making me react that way. That was a dream. And now this is another dream of this experience. And that's what it's like all the time. If you are staying tuned in and aware, you don't actually have to cling to any particular dream. You could say, oh, this is how it's feeling right now, but it might feel different in 5 seconds. It's a dream. So that kind of loosening of gripping, basically, this is me and they're insulting me, or whatever that thing is for you, you know, it's a dream. You're making up the dream all the time.
I'd like to question the mirror. When you say mirror, it makes me feel like I can't see anything but myself in this mirror. And that's not what we want. But that was the hit for me this time in this moment. And I'm not sure. I mean, the interconnection or reflection or impingement, or I don't know of another way to say it, where we are interpenetrating all the time with each other and with our environments.
It's really important question, actually. And I'll tell you, I think I've told this story before here, that there's another chant we do called the Jewel Mirror Sutra. And one time, in another temple, in another lifetime for me, in another dream of Zen practice, we were chanting that, and I was chanting away, chant, chant, chant. And I sat down, and I went, oh, I know what they're talking about. That's how these things kind of hit you in the head, like that V8 commercial. I know. And I knew what they were talking about. I mean, I don't know that they're really talking about this, but my awareness was, oh, Zazen, sitting down, is the mirror, the jeweled mirror of awareness. Because when you look, sit down and look in the mirror, whatever the mirror is, the first thing you see is you, Jackie. Mm-hmm. There's me and all of her and all of my stuff's in the mirror. Mm-hmm. But if you look in a mirror, you know there's more in the mirror, right? Mm-hmm. And in that day, I remember going, oh, all these other people are in the mirror. And all their stuff's in the mirror. And this room is in the mirror. And this room is part of this environment, which is in the mirror. This environment is on this little planet floating around. The whole thing is in the mirror. And nothing is staying in the mirror. Nothing's in the mirror. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, recognize that there's no way for you to be in a mirror and only be you in that mirror. Right. It's all of your ancestors. It's all of our ancestors in this mirror right now. It's our common ancestor going back and back and back. They're in the mirror, and now they're gone. So not just you.
Thank you.
One of my friends online, my Shakuhachi teacher actually, was in that room that day, so saying hi to Nyoshi-san. He was at that temple. Mm-hmm. Yes?
A question about the examples you made. In Trader Joe's, it's a...
Say it again?
I have questions about the examples you made. In Trader Joe's, I think it's like strangers. It's very easy to feel the peace.
Oh, yeah.
In freeway, people may get very angry, and in the worst case, there may be some crashes. And in workspace, there are work I don't like. How do you still see the sangha instead of being like getting really annoyed, feel the bad mood?
It's really, 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 really what our life is about, how to be in it, with it all. The question is, it might be easy to be friendly with strangers at Trader Joe's, but the rest of things may be not so easy. And it's true. I think it's really easy to be friendly to strangers, too. I actually love being friendly to strangers. It's harder in your intimate relationships, whether it's work or your loved ones, or less intimate but still kind of intimate in these cars on the freeway, right? Because, you know, they could really affect you at any given moment. And the question is how, you know, to handle your own expression and reaction to that. And, you know, this is why we sit zazen in a way, because we get used to our own expression and reactions. As things appear in our experience, you know, we might get annoyed. We might not think we're sitting properly and be annoyed with ourselves. All sorts of things arrive. And how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? You recognize it in the mirror of your existence. And you say, there's that. It's not I. It's not my annoyance alone. Probably other people have had this experience in life of being annoyed at their coworkers, right? Or the drivers. It doesn't just belong to me, but I'm the one who's suffering. And why am I suffering? Because I think I'm special. I think I'm specially suffering in this moment. But there's nothing very special about it. It's just what's happening. And that's just kind of happening all the time. This is just ordinary life. You have a choice in that moment to make it worse, to suffer more, or to look at it and say, well, there's some discomfort here. And what is it that I'm experiencing? And for me, the question always comes back to, who is it? Who is it? Because for me, and your mileage may vary, I don't know about you, for me, when I'm resisting, when I'm not feeling harmonic, I'm protecting myself from something painful. That's in the mirror too. Very often, by the way, other people see it. So it's our job to see it too. Who is it that's suffering? I'm not saying that the situation's not annoying. I'm acknowledging it could legitimately be the whole mass of the humanity could look at that situation from up here and go, definitely annoying. You could make that assessment. But why? It doesn't really help to evaluate like that. Instead, you could meet it and say, how can I not make things worse right now for myself and for everybody else? And so this question about who is it that's experiencing this, for me this has been really an important question, because I'm just like you. Nobody here is extremely enlightened and special and always like, nothing bothers me. Of course not. We're just all together in this, just humans. Things bother me, and I have to look. And by the way, in my experience, it's never this person who's upset. It's somebody else. Maybe as young as Oliver, maybe not that young. Somebody else who needs to protect, be protected. And so it's my job to take care of her now, in this moment, and not make it worse for me or for anyone else. So, good luck. That's what we're all doing, all the time. Thank you.
My question is, in the singing, for example, when there's the sensation of interconnectedness, and for me, I can also very much feel a sensation of we're just went out of my brain. disorientation, that's the word. Disorientation of the feeling of where am I in the verse? Which verse am I? So I'm not seeing anyone's face. But what key am I in? Where am I sitting and all of that? And so my question to you is, how do you meet the discomfort that can come with disorientation?
Well, that's really interesting. So sometimes, let's take it out of the context of singing. I can come back to singing, but let's say you feel a little bit in your life, the expression for me, my own experience was at sea, a little disoriented, like I don't know where north and south and east and west are, a little at sea. And maybe big time at sea, like, I don't know what's happening. There's two ways of experiencing that, with a kind of panic, like, Like, I gotta hold on to something. What do I hold on to? Or I'm free. I'm at sea. I'm gonna ride the waves and we're gonna see what happens next. I'm okay, no matter what. Most of us learn this in the school of really hard knocks, that I'm okay no matter what. And but when you learn it, you're okay no matter what. You can't lose that awareness. You're okay if you get cancer, you're okay when your loved ones die. You're okay no matter what, even though there's pain. So I want you to know there's this choice, just so that you have it. The smorgasbord of experience is both feeling at sea and not at ease, and also there's probably room to feel at ease. And like, okay, it's not what I necessarily think I would have chosen to be out here, but it's okay. I'm going to be okay. Now, coming back to singing, because it's such a material thing, you can have the same kind of moment where you're like, I don't know where I am, and I don't know who's singing, and what part am I in? And like, kind of frozen, right? And then in that freezing moment, you can have a little panic, or you could have a little like, oh, listen, I can just enjoy it. I can just for a millisecond listen to what's happening. And it sounds so great. And then come in wherever you want to come in. I mean, basically, that's what we're doing every day, right? Coming in wherever we can come in. Thank you.
I have questions, please, because we are talking about the group harmonies, harmony, and but sometimes when we are in the group or in the community, there might be some unconscious and homogeneous group norm, social norm, or that holds expectation to you. So at this moment, I might feel like if I should do this to meet others, to meet the group's expectations. So I'm thinking of like in this case, how this kind of harmony, how this kind of interconnectedness can still occur. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to answer you, but I want to point out first that I think your question is actually the same question that was just asked, in a way. So you're in a different situation, and you feel something's missing in your awareness. There's something maybe unconscious, cultural, whatever, that you don't know, and everyone else has expectations that you should know them. And you're, how do I meet this? How do I respond? And what would happen if in that moment you saw that arising, like, oh, I have some discomfort about whether or not I'm part of this song. And then you just stopped and listened to the song for a little bit without panic about being erased or canceled or not existent. You're there, you're part of the song. You're just not sure which section you're in right this moment. Maybe it arrives out of your pausing and giving it a little bit of non-anxious space. And maybe then a question will arrive for you, like in a playful way, you know, a kind way towards the one who thinks he doesn't get it. A playful kindness towards yourself, like, and you could ask, hey, I think I might be missing something. What am I missing here? I mean, what are you worried about? What are you worried about in that moment? That they're going to think ill of you? Who cares? You need to think good of you, right? You need to be able to say, hey, I don't know this song, and I want to be in the song, and I am in the song, so help me learn the lyrics. Just this kind of humility. Now, I understand in the real world that this could be troubling, because there's some weird idea we have that we have to be strong all the time, we have to know things, we have to demonstrate our abilities and prowess all the time. Well, that's exhausting. And life is less fun if you have to be something that's kind of an armor outside your body, and go out in the world like, I got it all together. You know, you're not fooling anybody, first of all, because nobody's got it all together. Even the ones who are telling you how together they are and how untogether you aren't. Untogether you are. So I would try to loosen your worry, your anxiety, like gently loosen the grip on feeling out. And just watch and find the song. You have it in you already. There's nothing you're missing. There's nothing wrong with anything about you. You're already complete. So you just need to kind of be able to find the way that's already here, a feeling connected. I have great faith that you can do this. I have great faith that all of us can do this. And it requires practice, right? We already have it. It's nothing you have to go get. This is why I'm highly recommending this practice, sitting down. You get familiar with your own sweet vulnerabilities. And then you can sing, just the way you are.
Why we have consciousness of everything, and where does it end?
Well, someone I know would answer that with, why not? And another one of my teachers would have said, no why questions. I am, you can ask anybody who knows me well, I love questions. I just, you know, I make everybody miserable asking questions. And the fact is that I ask why a lot, but there is no why. And if you want to think about it this way, why do you wear glasses? Why do I wear glasses? Why? Now, obviously we know why scientifically, right? But why is that the case? And we inherited a gene, right? And then why is that the case? And why did we inherit that gene? And why, and why, and why, and why, and why? Because the star exploded? I mean, there's no why. You cannot tease anything back. You should pay attention and know the causes and conditions of your happiness and your sorrow. You should pay attention to the things that make you feel afraid of life and the things that make you feel like, let's go, I'm part of it. But the why, I don't think you can tease out a thread and say, look world, I found the thread, this is why I wear glasses. Or I'm anxious, or I'm depressed, or I whatever, or I have, you know, a funny big toe. No why, but lucky you. In the Buddhist tradition, being born a human is incredibly rare, and you're incredibly lucky. So rather than talk about, you know, why, maybe think about how. How am I having consciousness? How am I here? How am I expressing this life? What does life want from me? What do I have to offer? The why, I don't know. I haven't been able to find a lot of answers to the whys. I think there's this really deep pool of potential answers. And you can spend the rest of your life picking at them. I do. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking why, but don't expect an answer. It's a lot of energy. Sorry. Or maybe congratulations. I don't know how you're going to view it. Oliver's dad.
You mentioned mosquitoes. You're talking about how do you reconcile the fact that it is a living being, but also carries the potential to end as a living being. How do you reconcile?
He's asking about mosquitoes and that they have the potential. They're living. I'm not sure if they're sentient. I always assume yes. I assume everything has feelings, like even this. I don't know. Everyone else would argue with me. Hi, Oliver. And how do we reconcile the fact that they exist, they have a life force, and you know they could be your grandmother, right? In our tradition. And how do we reconcile that with the fact that they might kill us, that they carry certain diseases? They are a disease vector, no question about it. And all I can say is that in our bodies, all the time, there are things alive that could kill us if they get out of control. And this system mostly manages it. And there are times and places when you don't want to get bitten by a mosquito. And there are times and places where you can say, okay, a mosquito got me. A mosquito got me. And I'm still here. And I think it's okay. So everything in context, kind of all the time, Oliver's dad. You might be someplace where you need to wear, you know, DDT to keep the mosquitoes off of you and a net because it could kill you. And you might be in another place where it's okay. You wouldn't have this problem if you were not trying to make a rule. And there aren't any rules. When we make a rule, it cuts down our own experience of reality. It shortens the possibilities on the list, and the possibilities are actually indefinite. They go on forever. Well, they definitely exist, but they're infinite, is what I wanted to say. So if you say, I have to have a rule about mosquitoes, and there's no budging, you're not alive in this moment. You're alive in your fear. And you have a choice. Now, I'm not saying no rules. I'm not into chaos. I really am not into chaos. But every kind of choice we make for kind of a harmonic experience, that's the way I would like to look at it, is harmonic experience, is an experiment. It's always an experiment. So, sure, let's try this on today. And how does it feel? Right now we're trying an experiment, Jikoji. We sit morning and evening at 7 in the morning, at 7 at night. We've decided to sit 7 in the morning at 6 at night. Now this sounds like not a big shift for you. It's a big shift. We're trying it for a week. Maybe the community will decide, 7's better. Maybe they'll decide, let's start at 4. I have no idea. The possibilities are infinite. But you can just play. And if you don't get hung up on, well, that's not how it was yesterday, and she's in charge and trying to control all of us, all of that story that is your problem, not harmonic. If you don't get caught up in that, it's just play. Let's try it this way. Let's try it. So some places you're going to kill the mosquito. Some places you're not. Depending. All depending. Okay? I've heard a very intense bell, so I think we're going to go up for tea and cookies. Before we chant a closing chant, I want to say thank you all for being here and for your kind attention to my few words. You might want to just forget it all now and find your own way. I mean, really, I would not be offended. I would be happy for you to just forget it and go find your way through life, your way. Come back and sing it to us sometime. I hope you'll come back. But while you're here, I thank you for being here. And I also want to tell you that Jikoji, like the monks and nuns and lay people in the olden days with the Buddha, they were completely supported by the wider community, and so are we. We are those monks. We are each those Buddhas, and so are you. And so we're dependent upon you for support. Jikoji, in this moment of its life, is in financial trouble because we have to replace our septic. And it's a big deal to replace a septic when we have 50-plus people coming every week. So if you have the capacity and the means, we really appreciate your donation. There's a QR code outside because we're so cool. We've got QR codes now. And there's some up in the community room. Having said all that, the teachings here are always free. If you don't have it, you can't contribute, it's okay. We're not going to see you as an outsider. You're part of this family. And we really appreciate your coming, whether or not you contribute or not. But we would love it if you contributed anything. You offer makes a really big difference to us. If you're in a company that has matching donation things, please write us and say, my company has it, and we'll help you do that. We have that capacity. Or if you have friends who just have money they just want to give away, we're available. Okay. We're going to do the closing chant, and then I hope you'll all come up and have a little tea and company.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.